Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 90 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I just got the team, Mr. Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
And Matt's fancy new haircut.
Looks good.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Quarantine
and, we're coming to the end of the week this week with a... A lot to talk about, I think, is an understatement. Like, this has been one of our crazier weeks of 2020 in a desert of a year of information. Man, did it just rain. So we got a lot to talk about over the course of this week. We're going to be breaking down that Disney Investors Day info drop specifically for the Marvel and the Star Wars of it all. A lot of big projects announced, a lot of new reveals about projects we knew about. So we got to go through all of that. We're also going to talk about all this Spider-Man 3 craziness. What a difference a week can make, really. Like, yeah, the Spider-Man 3, Marvel Spider-Man 3 is coming up. And I think the question we're all asking at this point is Tom Holland still in this joint at this point? So we're going to break down all of what's going on with that. Plus, we got some new comics to talk about this week. We're going to talk about Marvel's next big crossover event, King in Black. Plus, we're going to look at DC's Batman Black and White. And that's the one that's kind of sticking with me right now because I have some thoughts. So we got to get to all of this. Let's get started. Up at the top. So like we said, we went through the Disney Investors Day was a whole thing yesterday that we had to kind of do. And I'm not going to go through too much of the craziness of it all because we've done a lot of excellent breakdown on comicbook.com. Janelle, BD, and Jim kind of got together for a Twitch stream to immediately afterwards to get all those feels out. But there are some things we're going to talk about in kind of the larger picture of what was said and what it means kind of going forwards for the Marvel and the Star Wars franchises. So starting right at the top with the Marvel stuff, the biggest thing that kind of just jumped out is just how much this Marvel TV kind of venture on Disney Plus just exploded yesterday.
Yeah.
We saw Kevin Feige looking nice and lean after 2020 come on stage. And I know this was like a taped event, you know, and they're all standing in front of green screens and kind of telling us this stuff, but Kevin Feige just kept hitting us with bombs and like, he was just emotional.
Like it was nothing.
Like, yeah, he was just like, what?
He was
what
just like, oh, yeah.
I got this card. I got this card. I got this card. How you feel now? And we were just all like freaking out in our comic book chat. We're all like spazzing out, losing our minds. Different people who are fans of different things are losing like, you know, different percentages of their mind. It was a mess, but it was great. So let's talk about what happened there. So we got a Secret Invasion Disney Plus series, which is this Nick Fury series that we had heard about before. Bringing back him and Ben Mendelsohn from Captain Marvel as Talos. And that's going to be where we get Secret Invasion, apparently, in the MCU. So that's happening. That's a thing. And here's how it's going to happen. Armor Wars, which, you know, if you were an 80s kid like me and you read that kind of run of Iron Man, kind of Armor Wars was a big thing. And I've done different versions of it over the years. But that's like one of those classic Iron Man stories, basically, you know, the attempt to reclaim some of that technology of Tony Stark's that has gone out of control. And I guess we're spinning it in the MCU for kind of cleaning up Tony's legacy on the part of his best friend, War Machine, Jim Rhodes, Don Cheadle. So that's coming our way. But that's not the end of the Iron franchise. We are finally getting Riri Williams as Ironheart in the Ironheart series.
Yeah.
So crazy.
I know. I think that was the one I think Matt and I lost our minds for at the same time in the chat.
So, you guys have so much context, you know, to look forward to. I feel like I represent the people that are like, oh my God, more Wanda stuff, or like all of like the existing characters from the movies that we fell in love with and the content that's coming out with them. But the fact that you guys get to like predict and get excited about all these characters that haven't had their day yet, that's really exciting.
Whoa. The only thing you have created your own brand here. So the only thing I think you are trapped in the walls of your own brand, you should say, is you should be like happy for more content, correct,
Janelle? Oh, 100%. I am okay.
Just making sure we're on brand.
Oh, yeah.
We're on brand.
More content.
But yeah, Matt, how are you feeling about these projects? Like, what are you thinking about this kind of what they're doing with this Disney Plus section of the MCU right now?
I mean, that was a lot. It was a lot to take in. I mean, I think of the things they showed. There's a lot to get into there too, but just for the stuff that's coming up, I mean, it's no secret. Ironheart is the one I'm the most excited about, just because one, I like the character, but two, it opens up so much. Like there's so much you can do spinning off from that series and injecting that. I mean, of course, that's one more step towards the Champions series, which would be awesome. And then of course you can also do a bunch of things with like Tony Stark and all that, you know, afterwards. So There's a lot of really cool stuff there. I feel like that's the one that hit me the most. I understand why a lot of people are excited for Armor Wars. It wasn't like something that hit me, you know, in that spot. Secret Invasion is awesome. I'm excited for that. I'm not so excited that it's like, it feels like it's like a Nick Fury thing, like a lead thing, like where it's going to really be like Nick Fury as like the main
driven
character.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's not so exciting for me, but depending on how many other characters get in the mix and stuff, I'll be excited.
I was actually thinking about, that's the one that I'm kind of having my eye on as like, I don't know where they're going with this, because I feel like it's going to be unexpectedly like more comedic than we maybe think.
Oh,
with kind of like a buddy cop comedy. Like I could see them going buddy cop with Ben Mendelsohn and Sam L. Jackson.
Okay.
As this odd pair of Nick Fury and his, you know, shape-shifting partner, and all the kind of weird stuff they could do with all that as they investigate this conspiracy and stuff. So I kind of want to see where they go with that. Also, Dominic Thorne is going to be Riri Williams, and that's a big come up. So that was good. We also got confirmation that, yes, despite all the lies to our faces, Tatiana Maslany is the Hulk. We're getting Abomination back in that series. Tim Roth, they're basically doing an Incredible Hulk redo with swapping in Ruffalo instead of Edward Norton there. So, and I'm looking forward to like a, you know, tag team Hulk fight with Abomination rematch. That'd be an insane culmination of that series. And I think one thing I was surprised about, it sounds like they're going to be doing like kind of the majority where she is She-Hulk, like majority of the time. Instead of the transformation bit. So that I thought was a little surprising to me, but interested to see where that goes. Ms. Marvel, it was good to see that kind of rolling in to production. So happy all around. Let's jump to the movie.
I was pleasantly surprised with the Ms. Marvel for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't know what to expect, and I really loved what they showed us.
She is perfect.
And feel free, everybody,
perfect in that role.
Tell us what you were most excited about. What was your favorite part about the whole shebang? We want to hear it.
Yeah, and we also got awesome trailers for Falcon Winter Soldier, Loki, and a new one for WandaVision. And I think Loki just quickly has jumped up my list. We didn't have a lot to go on beforehand,
Same.
But that trailer was, I think, of the trailers I saw, I think that was my favorite of the ones that we kind of the existing Disney Plus ones that we were expecting kind of to have had already. But Tom Hiddleston looks like he's going to have a lot of fun with that. The kind of plane, I like how they're mixing like a crime heist with all this Asgard stuff when he's jumping out of the plane with the money case and getting, you know, Heimdall to be stuff like that. It's just like,
I'm glad people dug it, because it's the one I'm least excited about.
Oh,
I didn't like that trailer.
No,
I didn't like
it.
Oh my god,
it was just, I love Owen Wilson. I like
it
that
seemed
part.
Funnier than I thought it was going to be.
I just don't care.
Oh, my gosh.
Weird thing. I don't know why. It's not. I love Hiddleston in the role. Like, it's not anything against him. The talent involved is cool. And even I understand the premise. Like, the premise is cool on it. I mean, I'm always up for time stuff. But, like, yeah, I just – that trailer did nothing for me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Breaking my heart.
You were, yeah, I know. I mean, yeah.
That was my second favorite.
Anakin, like, you know, I hear you. Okay. We got to respect the man's opinion, but like, yeah, I would have been surprised. I thought you would have been like the one. You were like the chosen one to like this, but okay. Fair enough. Let's jump to the movie side because that's the Disney Plus side, but let's jump to the movie side and just talk real quick. So we got some good movie updates as well. The biggest one that, of course, has just exploded is that John Watts, Spider-Man Home Trilogy director, is going to move on next to taking on the Fantastic Four. So he will be doing, and again, Kevin Feige, I was in so deep to things I was doing that I actually missed that. And then I just heard John Watts will direct. And I was like, John Watts will direct what? And then the internet like exploded. Yeah. So Fantastic Four is coming from John Watts. And Matt, let's check with you because the internet's a lot more mixed about this than I thought they would be. So you seem to be kind of leaning towards the Grinchness of it all.
I don't know, I'm leaning towards the Grinch. But I, as someone who has been on record as not like the biggest fans of the Spider-Man movies, even though I love Tom Holland as Spider-Man.
I'm with you, Matt. I'm with you.
I'm not thrilled about this. And it's not like I'm not down on it necessarily. We'll see what he does. But do I look at that and go like, oh, I want that tone, that vibe to the characters and that back and forth in the Fantastic Four? No, not really. So, like, I don't look at Homecoming or Far From Home and go, yeah, I want that for Fantastic Four. To be fair, I am also not the biggest Fantastic Four fan just in general. So maybe, you know, I was looking for something a little different to maybe try and hook me. Maybe for people who are huge fans of those characters, maybe they're like, yeah, that's exactly what I want. For me, I was like, meh. On an already meh premise.
I think somebody looked at the Josh Trank films and was like, what's the furthest way this way we can go? And they were like, Spider-Man guy?
That's absolutely true. And this is would be that, exactly.
Yeah, so here we go. The other big kind of reveal we got was that Thor, Love and Thunder, that Christian Bale will be playing Gore, the God Butcher.
I love this.
Gore!
He will be playing Thor 4's Gore. So, how do you feel about that? Because Matt, I think you probably know the most about like kind of the Thor comic series in recent years. How's Gore the God Butcher? But this is not going to be the same Gore we got in the comics because this is Taika Waititi, right?
But that's what excites me about it, because I really enjoyed Jason Aaron's Thor. I really enjoy like the premise of all that. Not even so much the premise, really, because I mean, how many times have we seen like, I'm going to kill all the gods. The gods all die. Here's a big event. Here's a big thing. Here's a doomsday type of situation. Like, we've seen that a lot. So it was more like the relationships and the dynamics that the characters had throughout the story that was more interesting. That is why I'm excited for Taika to get his hands on it, because I'm actually excited to see what he does with that. I will say Bale is a great actor, you know? So, I mean, I'm very intrigued to see what he can bring to a character that, to me anyway, is not like, you know, like Gore's not the deepest. It's not the most like thoughtful, deepest character. There's some really interesting things there, but he's not, again, on the level of some other ones. So I'm excited to see what they can do with it. So I'm hopeful. See, I can be positive.
There you go. Let's keep the hope train going for you, because I know the thing that really made you stand up and cheer was hearing about your girl and now girls in Captain Marvel 2. So big Captain Marvel 2 update we got was that, yes, we will be getting Kamala Khan in Captain Marvel 2. Ms. Marvel will be there. And also WandaVision's kind of breakout character, Monica Rambeau, will also be in there. Matt, what can you tell us about this? Is there anything particularly about kind of that inclusion of characters that points to anything significant in the storyline? Or is it just kind of a good time where we're kind of suiting up for here?
It's a little bit of both, because like we've seen from the even the sizzle reel, but even like set photos from Ms. Marvel, that like the Captain Marvel like adoration that she has is in full effect. She even wears a costume at one point of Cap. There's a poster in her room. So like that is very much in fitting with the Kamala Carol relationship. So number one, just from a mentor type of thing, and like that moment that I cannot wait for her to meet her idol, like that's going to be great. And they have a great dynamic in the books, right? So that just on its own is interesting. Once you bring Monica in, even though in the Captain Marvel movie, Maria kind of was the Monica, essentially, like that character had all those things that you would typically associate with Monica in the books. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. You know, we still don't know like when the last time Monica saw Cap was, because like the movie ends with like her heading in space to help the Skrulls. And then, you know, Monica's still younger at that point. So we don't know what that dynamic is. So it's cool to like, I'm interested to see what they do with that, fill in the blanks. Did she ever come back? I'm assuming she did. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of interesting things there. And then also, of course, in the books, Monica takes the title of Captain Marvel. That's a very complicated history, but essentially she has the title of Captain Marvel for a while, but she also has like four other superhero names. So I'm interested to see what happens there. Does she get powers? Like all of those things. So like having them all three in the same film was like something fans wanted, but you know, we want a lot of things. So the fact that it's happening is cool. Like it's super cool.
We're going to move on, but Janelle Wheeler, last word. What are you most excited for out of this Marvel future?
I'm really excited about the first one up, WandaVision. I'm a big Loki fan. Loki's like one of my top five favorites ever. And somehow I just have kind of gotten more excited about Wanda. I know that we already know a lot about the trailer. Like they released another trailer. It was very obviously like similar. There weren't a lot of really new moments, but I think because it is happening so soon and because of the mystical vibe and because there's so many unanswered questions and just to see Wanda and Vision back together again in some way, my heart is just really pumped. I actually cried watching the trailer that they showed. It was very emotional for me. And I was just, I think after this year and like not having the content, just that first like moment, that first thing to like grab onto, that first show, I'm just going to be absolutely pumped to see it.
All right, Janelle Wheeler, ending us up. See, that's positivity right there, man.
Positivity.
All right, we're going to jump really quick over to Star Wars. And we got a lot of updates on the Star Wars front. The Disney Plus side of it is going to explode. We're getting an Ahsoka series. We're getting the Marshals of the New Republic. We know Mando 3 is when it's coming. We saw some of the Andor series. And yeah, that was all cool. On the movie side, we kind of got a tease of what Taika Waititi's movie's gonna be with the flavor from a logo. But the cool thing that for me was that Patty Jenkins is gonna be doing Rogue Squadron, and she had this what I called the best director audition tape of all time on an airfield rollerblading, talking about her dad being a fighter pilot and how inspirational this was for her and how she wants to bring that into Star Wars. Really cool. We also learned that Hayden Christensen, they confirmed he will be suiting up as Darth Vader in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series from Deborah Chow, which, you know, this is Hayden's redemption moment, and I stand behind that big time.
Agreed.
I just rewatched the Star Wars prequels with my son for the first time, and I'm leaving the human side out of this. He really enjoyed him, but more than that, like on Disney Plus and kind of seeing them, they've aged to the point where they kind of fit that same kind of kitschy weird thing as the original trilogy. It's kind of a little more in sync, and I just enjoy them now. I don't have my like internet stakes all up in it, and so like it's just a little more enjoyable, and I would like to see him come back and really them recreate in that relationship and another duel between them. And it's good because it fills in a blank of how Obi-Wan confirms that he's changed, because he never knows that Anakin is still alive at the end of the prequels, but by A New Hope he knows that he's Vader. And, you know, he has this whole story to tell Luke about it and all that stuff. And this will help fill in that blank. So that's cool. Do you guys think some people are worried on the internet that Star Wars is getting a little too crowded again? Because Star Wars tried to ramp up content when the sequel trilogy went out with this kind of, so you know, the standalones and all that. And it became too much for people. Mando's been a good thing. it's opened some doors. Do you think this is too much? Because we got I'm only touching on a piece of this.
Right.
The ones that we mainly care about. They went on. There was so much Star Wars stuff that I can't even tell you about it because I glazed over at a certain point. Kathleen Kennedy was just on. It was like, I was like, she could have taken my wallet if I had been standing there in person because I was just like, you know.
Comatose.
Bad Batch, that Clone Wars spinoff looked really cool. That reel looked really cool. But yeah, there's a bunch of other projects. Does this all seem like too much, too fast to you guys? Janelle.
Okay, I don't think it is because it's a completely different format. These are shows, not movies. You can kind of, as I've learned, not having all of the context with Star Wars and that entire, you know, universe, everything that it is, you can enjoy things separately. You don't have to like latch onto one. And then like, in order to understand that, you have to watch all of the things. I think there's going to be casual consumers of this, and then there's going to be the diehards, and the diehards are probably, I mean, I can't imagine them not liking all this content and not having all of this. Well, but for me, casually speaking, I'm probably going to cherry pick personally.
There's some that's also going to come, I'm sure, into play. Like, there's a High Republic series called The Acolyte that looks like pretty ominous. It has a slash title on it, and yeah. It's in the final days of the High Republic, which is this new line they're launching. Next year, we're getting a Lando event series. I don't know what that means, but that could go several kinds of ways. We're getting a first anime, Star Wars Visions. I think there's more for the kids. So, like, yeah. Right.
Pick and choose what works best for you. Hopefully, you don't have to, like, have this idea and this, like, massive, you know, time set aside to watch every single thing to understand. But I do love that if you have put in the time, if you are a huge super fan, there's going to be call tos and beautiful Easter eggs. And it's just, I think they've done such a good job with Mandalorian. I have very high expectations and hopes for this.
Yeah. And just kind of, we're going to take a break, but just to kind of close us out on this. Yeah, I mean, we're basically filling up a section of a Disney Plus streaming brand, right?
Seriously. Like, yeah.
We need more options under that Star Wars banner.
Right.
And yeah, we're not going to talk Mandalorian this week, but if you haven't seen the episode, it makes a case at least for why, if they do some right moves, this Rangers of the New Republic series could actually be pretty fun. There's some characters we could see show up that's pretty cool. So we'll talk more about that on comicbook.com Star Wars. But we're going to take a break. That's it for our Disney Investor Day 2020 wrap-up. That's the parts we care about. Well, I know Matt likes some of the Disney stuff coming, but we just...
I do, too. I'm with Matt on that. Pixar. Yeah,
guys, we have a shorter show. I can't do that. We'll be right back after this break. All right. So... let's talk. What's next? Spider-Man. It's been a crazy week. And in some ways, I'm glad we do things just once a week now, because I couldn't imagine trying to spread this Spider-Man stuff over two shows in the week, because it's been a week, y'all. So we started seeing this blip of what was happening in Spider-Man 3. You know, while we were all looking at Kraven the Hunter and all this stuff, Jamie Foxx's Electro was coming back, which made us raise our eyebrows, and people, we were like, okay, well, maybe it's just him getting recast in the MCU as a different version of the Electro, you know, all this stuff. Then we started having, like, Doctor Strange was possibly showing up, and we're like, well, that's kind of multiverse strange. And then we go on, and now, like, in this week, in the last week, I think it's just been like Alfred Molina's Dr. Octopus is coming back, and everybody's like, okay, wait a minute, hold on here, like, what's happening? And then it just, like, is a snowball, right? Then we got Andrew Garfield's reportedly coming back. Kirsten Dunst reportedly coming back.
I thought you meant like the Garfield was coming back.
The Garfield. No. I'm excited
now. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would be excited about that too.
Thank you.
But yeah, no, Andrew Garfield's coming back, and you know, Kirsten Dunst is coming back. Then there's rumors, where's Toby? Then people are spying on where Toby is now. And he's looking like he's showing up for costume fittings, and everybody's like, oh man, it just keeps on going. And it just looks like this thing. Then we hear Daredevil's going to maybe be in this. I mean, this has gotten so crazy. I forgot how much this is actually going on this week. Yeah, Daredevil's going to possibly, Charlie Cox's Matt Murdock, Daredevil's going to possibly be in this. Then there's entire Kingpin campaigns. We want him to. Like, it's literally turning into that Avengers Endgame scene. Like, is it like, you know, is everyone here? You know, you wanted more, like, and people are like, yeah. So as exciting as this is on the one front, of course, it's raised this discussion and entire series of jokes and memes already about, you know, where does poor Tom Holland fit into this? Matt, is this too much? I mean, I feel like this is the antithesis of what you actually said you wanted at the end of Far From Home when we talked about that movie, which was to get Spider-Man out of everybody else's shadow and let him just, you know, let Spider-Man be Spider-Man in his own movie. Well, I mean, he's going to do that technically just with other Spider-Men.
When's he going to do it?
With other Spider-Men. I don't know.
This is not at all what I wanted. So, yes, I feel like, yes, the answer is there can be too much. This is too much. Why is this in? It's one thing if it's a major event film like Infinity War or even an Avengers movie, you would be more accepting because, like, those movies have wider ramifications and are bigger event type things kind of made for featuring a bunch of people. This is supposed to be Spider-Man's movie. So at this point, I understood the various Spider-Men coming in. So, like, that was going to be a cool moment or whatever. And I understand also that you probably need other pieces in place to make that happen, i.e. Doctor Strange. But, like, why the hell is Daredevil there? Like, why is Dr. Octopus coming back? Like, Electro, like, and at this point, please, if everyone's getting a second shot, someone give Paul Giamatti a call because he needs a redo on Rhino. And that was terrible. he needs a redo. So I don't like this. That was the whole point of those first two movies was, like, he has a mentor. At some point, Spider-Man has to, like, grow up and be, like, a legit hero on his own and have team-ups because, oh, they happen to be in the same area. Not because, like, he's got to be taught by somebody or schooled by, like, at some point that gets old. And to me, that's already old. So I'm not thrilled about this. More so not for the individual talents, because they're all awesome and I want them in the MCU, but do we have to do it all in the same movie? Like, can we spread that out a little bit? That's me.
Personally, I'm leaning towards John Watts is kind of a comedian. I'm leaning towards the thing that this is going to be like one massive, not so much fake out, but just not quite what people expect. I feel like this could be like the climactic end to a movie where it's just like there's a whole wide Spider-Verse out there and we begin to just see these kind of cameo appearances, kind of like the Arrowverse did with its Crisis stuff. Like, you just kind of get these little vignettes and scenes of these various parts of the Spider-Man universe. And what we're really seeing is them bringing back people just to run through maybe montages. I don't know if this will be a major part of the story. I think the story will be kind of weirdly showing Peter Parker a bigger thing to make him appreciate a smaller thing kind of story. You know what I mean? While then opening the franchise doors to, like, literally any possibility thereafter on Sony's side. Cause they have, this is a lot of this could fall back into Sony's court, right? For them to take the franchise afterwards. If you know, weirdly, if they bring back Garfield or something, like, any of that stuff. So yeah, I'm wondering if this is all just going to be like a lot of work for just one kind of, you know, frivolous payoff scene.
Right. And so much excitement, so much hype. And then we just see like 30 seconds of each person or something. Like, it would just be so weird. Well, I just feel like it could be so muddled.
Would you be upset?
Yes.
Not me, because I'm just cynical and semi-dead inside, but like, and I know the business. Like, I don't think any of these people signed up. I don't think Tobey Maguire, like, stopped playing with his kids to come, like, do an entire Spider-Man movie. I could be totally wrong.
Right. No, you're probably
all
right.
Maguire fans, and I hope, if that's what you're hoping for, that I'm wrong and you get something more than that. But I just feel like it the writing would be on the wall that it's just kind of, they get them in the door by saying, like, all you literally have to do is just, like, show up on day, and, like, let us get a couple shots of you guys standing there, and you know, that's it, really. And it's just for the fans, and it's just for this thing. So, and it's a franchise opener.
That's what I hope for, just because then it's a small, contained thing with a bunch of really cool
cameos
and suggestions of, like, hey, this person, we can access them now. Here's the entryway to bring them in fully if we want to. I like that.
And I think that's my just speculation is that it's just a franchise door opener, and it's something Marvel would put together on a scale to help Sony out, right? Because then Sony can do literally anything with an entire Spider-Verse after that.
Right.
And, or even set up any of those big Spider-Verse villains as a franchise of their own and tie all their stuff together. So that's my theory. I don't know that, but like, I feel like that would explain how they'd get all these people back in into this thing. Even Paul Giamatti's Rhino. All right, let's move on. So that's what's going on with Spider-Man 3. We'll keep you updated on comicbook.com, Marvel, about what all's happening with that. So this week in comics, let's talk, guys. We've been through some Marvel crossovers this year. Seems like we've been like middling to not impressed with them so far. In the last year, we did Empire, which, you know, I'm not afraid to say I respectfully disliked.
That's on point. That's on
yes,
point.
It is. Yes, yes,
I didn't like it at all.
I'm trying to respect the efforts of the creators who I'm sure put work into. Then we did Ten of Swords, which was kind of a middling thing, that X-Men crossover. Now we're at King in Black, which is this big Marvel Universe crossover, of which Venom is the centerpiece, of course. Null, the god of the symbiotes, has kind of arrived on Earth, and it's about how things go very wrong with that. And we have King in Black number one, and I've read Venom 31, which I think is the second part of that, and I think that's all we have so far, or are there other tie-ins out there? So,
I think there's one other one, but it's not like those are the two main.
Okay.
And even Venom is really a side thing that doesn't reveal a ton more. So
no, and I was about to say that. I mean, this one is just like right off the bat, it's kind of in the middle. I mean, they did this thing with the Venom Beyond kind of nice trick of that previous Venom storyline that was in this alternate universe. And then he comes back and it's like, oh, all the waiting's done, like time for this war with Null. And it's been interesting how they stage it, because we get like, you know, we're in the middle of the battle, but they made these plans. We're not sure about what went on in the past for them to prepare for this. But in the first issue, it's pretty drastic that things are not going well. And this is like, Null is really taken immediately to that kind of Omega level Marvel villain by doing some pretty drastic things that we're going to talk about. Spoilers for King in Black.
Oh, yeah, spoilers.
Like, I love how they just kind of take Marvel's big MacGuffin Sentry, who comes flying in, and quickly establish, nah, this is a new era of villain. We're not playing around, like, because that guy just literally tears Sentry in half. and Null is a freaky villain because the idea of this creature that can control literally an entire planet worth of symbiotes is pretty horrifying, and just seeing people get covered in, you know, black goo and all the kind of lethal ways that he can use that power in, you know, would make Terminator blush. So,
oh my gosh.
I enjoyed that. The Venom kind of sidebar, I'll just say, was interesting. It was more Tom King-y than I thought it would be. That issue, and it, because it's just literally an issue about Venom falling to the ground for an entire issue. So interesting, unexpected things, but still feels like it's the one crossover this year that actually has that big Marvel-wide appeal.
Agree. I feel like this is the truest event all year long, aside from was Absolute. This year or last year? It's all blending together.
I know. I think Absolute Carnage was last year or ended at the very beginning of this year.
Okay. Because it feels like, geez. But, I mean, honestly, since then, that's the most traditional, and I mean by that, like, roller coaster, popcorn, big blockbuster thing that feels like a legit event for Marvel, anyway. That's been the – and to me so far – you know, I feel like Ten of Swords got off to a more interesting start, maybe is the best way to put that, but this still feels like bombastic and fun. I feel like this is finally the event that will hopefully get us to look past Empire and what Empire could have been. Though the most important stuff here is still the same thing that's been key to all the Venom books, even Venom Beyond, which was actually really good, is Dylan and Eddie. It's their relationship is, and they're growing, like him growing to a parent and trying his best, and like Dylan just recently meeting his mom, gives an alternate universe mom, but like still like all those things are really interesting. So that's still the core of this. And like Absolute Carnage, that's going to be what makes it work if they keep that through line.
Janelle, we threw you into this. How are you doing?
I loved this so much. Like, breezed through it so fast and wanted to kind of go back and check on a couple things. But I absolutely loved this. I knew exactly what was happening. I never felt lost. Obviously, I'm familiar with a lot of these characters, so I felt very comfortable in this space. And I just loved it. I the artwork was beautiful. The writing was well done. Very excited about this. I read three comics this week. You know, you guys had me do that. And this was definitely my favorite of the three, for sure. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So we're going to be keeping an eye on King in Black because, like Matt said, I mean, this is like the real of these Marvel events.
Yeah, it felt like that. Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how it resolves and what it does for symbiotes in the Marvel universe going forward, because it's a concept that got a little out of hand. So I'm kind of seeing how they kind of clear the stage and reset things with this, because there's some potentially interesting things that Venom Beyond actually foreshadowed or set the stage for. So
yeah, like coming in cold to that, I could tell that this probably was a huge thing that I didn't really know how powerful it was and how big it was, but I still felt it. Like, I felt the impact and I knew how big of a deal it was and how terrifying these things were. And I'm just pumped to see the rest. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Let's get into the one. Matt, you stumped really hard for DC this week that we were inclusionary. We never have any bias towards one publisher or the other or any of the independents in between, but it just didn't seem like DC put up anything this week that we were really interested to talk about. But Matt, he stumped hard for all you DC fans, and he put up Batman Black and White. So let's talk. Let's talk about Batman Black and White. All I'm going to say, and like I said, I've been working hard to be more kind of civil and diplomatic and respectful of the creative efforts put into these projects, is that Batman Black and White is something I label as a Ocean's 12. And if you don't know what that term means, it's one that I and some other loose world bold thinkers have applied. It's kind of any project in the entertainment industry that carries the same sins as Ocean's 12, which is just like a bunch of the people who got together and were like, oh, let's make this movie that's going to be fun for us and it, but maybe not so much as fun or like for us watching, as we're not so much in the crowd or the joke of this as a bunch of people. And I felt like Batman Black and White was kind of in that vein. I could see this as an awesomely unique coffee table book at a really, you know, hardcore DC fan geek's house, sitting there and something I'd be pick up while we were having a cocktail party or something. And I'd be like, oh, what is this? This is interesting. But just as a read for casual comic fans, like, no, not for me. First of all, I'll just run down the list. This was another one you could not read, Comixology Guided View. That was
Oh my
helpful.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was driving me insane. So
my gosh. Yeah, right? Especially certain ones. Oh, man.
Yeah, you had to kind of zoom out and just look at each page. So it became quickly more like a Finding Waldo experience.
Yes.
Or an M.C. Escher's painting than like, you know.
Which I have respect for.
I do, exactly. If I was at a cuck drinking a wine glass in my hand and the coffee table book I picked up, I'd
yeah,
like,
it would be beautiful in print. Fancy yes. Party.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
Fancy Party Batman, exactly. And yeah, some of the storytelling was just also very, it looked like the writers had gotten in a room and pumped each other up very much, which can be, as somebody who's been in a lot of writer workshops, it can be very good. It could also be very bad, because this one just, I mean,
can feel very self-indulgent.
Yes, yes. The COVID one nearly broke me.
I'm so glad you guys are saying this. I texted Matt, and one of the books, I was like, I swear to God, I'm reading Shakespeare. Like, I can't understand what they're saying. It was only one section, but I was so confused. With yeah, one
COVID
of those
one I snapped on with the COVID pearls in Invisible Enemy, I was like, bro, this is not what we need right now.
The one I'm talking about was one after that. It was
Just get on a video and sing Imagine. Like, stop.
The one that I'm talking about, it felt very like poetry or something. I don't know.
I know which one you're talking about.
I didn't understand.
I still don't know who that person was because I couldn't finish the story. I was like, I don't know if you're Robin or what's happening here, but I'm going to go on to the next one.
Oh, God. I pushed through.
Is it five? I think there's five stories. Might be four because there's like two small interludes, which, by the way, one thing that I would love for them to make an improvement on, and this is especially for people reading on Comixology, but also just in general, they don't label when a story, they label when a story starts and with the new creative team. They do not label the interludes. So like, you don't know, there's two instances where you just switch.
You just have to like make sure you're paying attention to the artwork.
Yeah. I'm like, did the story end? Like, are we in a new thing? And then it's like done. That's not done very well. And that needs to improve in the next one. Like any anthology, right? This is gonna, every story is gonna be a little different. Like the next issue is gonna feature like Tom King, right? So there's gonna be different creators with every single one. The Paul Dini one, I actually liked. I actually enjoyed that one. Mm-hmm. And I believe the story surrounding Croc.
That was the one.
That
was the only one I really came away and was like, okay, I like this one.
I liked it
because it used the black and white in the primary way I thought was most effective, which was the noir kind of throwback story. Which was really good using Killer Croc. And there were just a lot of point of view reversals in that were interesting.
Yes, the Pearls one was my least favorite. And the reason why, though, is because, like, at this point, I am so overseeing anything to do with Batman's origin. Like, anything tying back to, like, why I'm Batman is boring to me. So, like, we know, like, anything that, like, am I the villain? Like, any of those, like, I'm so over certain story tropes when it comes to Batman. So, like, the Pearls, I understand, and it was actually kind of cool, like how they followed the Pearls, and I didn't hate it as much at the very end of the story, but I still didn't love it, and that's one thing that I don't like. I also actually found some interesting things in that ninja, the ninja
bear concept of it. The story was really cool.
The art was
cool once you pulled back and could appreciate it.
Right.
That was one case where I felt like I needed to be holding a book in my hand.
Yes.
The one fist.
Very interesting concept.
Yeah. And that was a gorgeous artwork, but I did feel the Waldo thing because I was trying to like find Batman.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, it was one I had to him. But I guess we gotta wrap it up. But just to kind of wrap it up, I think that brings us back full circle to saying, like, if you enjoy the concept of Fancy Party Batman, this book is probably for you.
I think it'd be a beautiful coffee table, like something to put on display even. It's just cool because of the coloring and everything. I don't know if you're decorating your house. That's just the woman in me.
This is fancy. Like coloring in books.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're getting that on a positive note almost. So let's do that. All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Matt, do we have any rundowns on comics or anything this week? Or are you?
No, because you can check out all of our reviews on comicbook.com this week. But we were diving into a couple. So I was like, no, we're good.
Yeah, we talked. We hit the big bullet points.
I love comics.
So you guys, thank you for tuning in to Comic Book Nation. We hope to see you every week. We put up new episodes on Fridays now, I believe, and we will be live on Twitch when we do them. You can also catch them on Facebook later if you miss the Twitch live, and if you miss the Facebook one, you can also catch us on the Comic Book Nation YouTube page. We're also on the Comic Book Nation Twitter handle, hashtag. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Janelle Wheeler.
And we're still not back in an office, so we still have a merch closet full of shirts we got to get rid of. So if you want to leave a 5-star review of the podcast on Apple Podcast, you will be marked down for one of our free shirts when we get back in there. So take advantage while you can. Otherwise, thank you for tuning in. As always, this has been Comic Book Nation, and we hope to see you guys next time. Peace.
Deuces.
Bye, guys.